love you.
Hello, my name's Tom Walker. Welcome to That'll Be The Day. In this podcast, I have a bit of an exclusive. I'm going to be talking to a visually impaired man whose graduation ceremony didn't exactly go as he would have wanted it to. But before we hear from Connor Scott Gardner, if you like the music at the start of this podcast, it's a track called That'll Be The Day by the Liverpool band The Vow. And as always, I'll be featuring a track by The Vow at the end of this podcast. To find out which one it is, stay tuned. Now, when you finish a course of study in higher education, you're usually invited to a graduation ceremony. If you've been to college, you may already know the drill. Some bigwig on the stage calls out your name and, clad in cap and gown, you step forward to pick up your certificate. Only when Connor attended his MA graduation ceremony at Leeds University, it didn't quite happen like that. In this, the only recorded interview Connor has done, he tells me the full story. And with me is Connor Scott Gardner. We're in a very warm flat in the centre of Leeds, and you might just hear a fan in the background. Connor, how are you?
I'm good, how are you?
I'm not too bad, thank you. It's a lovely day. Yeah. And you've got a lovely top floor flat here.
Yeah, it's nice. There's a lot of light, so there's two skylights in the roof, and then there's a big kind of normal window. And just in this room, you know, there's windows everywhere, which is nice, but it does mean we get the sun.
So you're in the middle of your summer holidays.
Yes.
But they started quite controversially with a situation, shall we say, at graduation at Leeds University. Take up the story.
Yeah, so when it came time to graduate, we were all invited to register for our graduation ceremony, and that's, you know, just fairly standard. So I filled in this form, and on the form it had a question about any access requests. So I thought, well, that's good, I'll just pop in that I'm going to need to do a rehearsal of the ceremony, so I'm totally blind, so what I wanted to do was just go over where I needed to walk. So I fill in this form and I send it off, and that's great. But after a couple of weeks, I hadn't heard anything, and I was like, well, we're getting increasingly closer to the ceremony date at this point. So I emailed my disability advisor, who is really, really good, and I basically said to her, oh, you know what, I filled this form in, but I haven't heard from anyone from the graduation team. Can you just get in touch with them and see if you can find out what's going on?
So just to clarify, they didn't acknowledge the form?
No. Well, I mean, I got the acknowledgement that said you've registered one ticket for graduation, like the standard response, but right, they didn't acknowledge the access part of it at all. So my disability advisor emails them and CCs me into this email and is like, can you sort this out with Connor, please? You know, he's sent you this information. Can you follow up with him? So they kind of do, and they're like, oh, well, yes, you know, you can come in an hour before your ceremony starts and go over what needs to happen. And I was a bit like, I'm not sure about that, because I needed to pick up my gown and my cap on the day. I needed to pick up like all my different stuff. And I was just like, what if there's any delays? You know, that gives us virtually no time to go over it. And if anything comes up where I think, we need to make an adjustment, that also gives us no time to put that in place. So I basically came back to them and I said, look, thank you, but this isn't going to work. And I've already outlined why, because by this point I had already explained to them that I needed a rehearsal several days in advance. And they basically came back to me and said, oh, well, you know, we're very busy at the moment. And I was like, look, I do understand this, but I told you about this when I registered for my ceremony, so this shouldn't have come as a surprise. In the end, they let me do a rehearsal 2 days before my ceremony. And my disability advisor basically emailed me and said, look, would you like disability services to provide you with a PA for the ceremony just in case? And I was like, yes, because I know that Leeds trains from disability services. They train the PAs really well. And I didn't trust that the staff from the graduation team would actually respect my boundaries. So we go to the rehearsal, and I go with a friend of mine who's visiting me. And we go in, and I kind of walk across the stage, and I look at where I need to walk, and I'm like, okay, this is great. And then another member of staff from the graduation team, so the one who was actually showing me was really nice, she was really, really good, and I think was probably the best person I dealt with. But this other member of staff is like, oh, I'm just very concerned, you know. You know, she's going to walk into the person reading out the names and all this. So aside from like the misgendering thing, which is obviously a separate issue, I was effectively being spoken about to the other member of staff and to my friend.
As if you weren't there.
Yeah, completely as if I wasn't there. And the other member of staff was like, no, it's going to be fine. You know, we've gone over this. And I basically said, look, I'm presuming they'll see me coming. And they were like, oh, well, yes, but, you know, they're not going to move. And I was like, well, look, like, this isn't an issue. I'm going to hear them reading out the names. I'm using my cane. Nothing's going to happen. But they seemed really funny about it. But I sort of left and I thought, well, we've gone over it. I've got the PA from Disability Services. It will be fine.
So when you'd done that, were you at that point concerned about their concerns? Or did you think, well, we've managed to smooth them over. It'll be all right on the night.
Honestly, I thought it'd be fine.
And do you think it was just ignorance on the other person's
part?
Oh,
yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think it was ignorance and just a really negative view of blind people and what we're capable of, you know, and just this idea that I'd just be wandering all over the stage not knowing where I was, which is completely ridiculous. But we get to the morning, you know, and I meet my sister and my nephew who have come up. I'm with my friend and I pick up my gown and everything, and I meet the PA, who's lovely. She's based with Disability Services. And so we go in and my sister and my nephew take their seats in the audience, and I go and take my seat because we have assigned seats as graduates. And my PA is next to me, and I basically say to her, she asked me, you know, how do you want this to work? And I say, well, once they signal for us to come up, because this is all done silently, you know, while the rest of the ceremonies, because they signal people up in small groups. I said, well, if you just nudge me, we'll get up. If you show me to the bottom of the stairs that I walk up and then leave me there and walk round to the bottom of the set of stairs that I go down, because it's a different set of stairs, then there'll be plenty of time. I'll go up and you'll meet me in the bottom of the next step. The next set of stairs and can show me back to my seat, because what I really wanted to do is walk across the stage by myself
independently.
Yeah completely, which I mean it's literally a few steps. So but before this happens, when we're still sat in our seats after we've had this conversation, I don't know if it was the same member of staff who raised concerns on the Tuesday, so my ceremony was on the Thursday, or it was a different member of staff, but they came up and they were like, look, we're just a bit concerned that, you know, you're going to be a lot slower, and, you know, we're concerned that your PA won't be at the place in time. And I was like, look, we've worked this out. You know, she's going to leave me at the bottom of one set. Before my name's even called, she'll walk round to the next set. Like, there's plenty of time. It's absolutely fine. You know, we've already worked this all out. I know what I'm doing. And I kind of thought nothing of it again. I was like, this is annoying, but what could they do? You know, in that moment, I didn't expect anything to really change. So we're signaled up, and there's only two people on my course graduating, because we had extended our degrees. So the girl in front of me, her name gets called, and at this point I'm stood at the bottom of the set of stairs I have to walk up. And then the person reading out the names doesn't read out my name. They go on to the next degree.
So you had made your way to the steps,
yeah,
at the foot,
yeah,
of the stage.
Yeah.
You were expecting to hear, yeah, the Connor Scott Gardner, please, yeah, and nothing.
Yeah, nothing. And my PA's already walked around to the bottom of the next set of stairs, because, again, you know, this is what we'd planned. So I just sort of wait, and I think, well, I'm going to see what happens. You know, and I literally just thought, well, this is ironic that they've, you know, that the person reading out the names, who isn't a member of the graduation staff, by the way, it was the head of the school, so he had nothing to do with this whole situation. He's just got a list of names. So I just thought, oh, he must have just, you know, accidentally missed my name. Like, things happen at live events, mistakes happen. And I thought, well, it's ironic that they were making a big fuss about me, yet it was on their side that things went wrong.
Mm.
So anyway, someone runs up on stage and obviously lets him know that he's missed off a name. And because they're whispering it to him, he only kind of gets half my name out. And I go up and I get my certificate from the vice chancellor, and I walk down the stairs and everything is fine. It maybe takes me 10 seconds or so longer, but mostly because there's absolute chaos, right? No one really knows what's going on. We're sitting back down. I say, well, do you mind just taking a quick look at my degree certificate? Because if they didn't call my name, maybe they've given me the wrong certificate. So she has a look and she's like, oh, there's actually no certificate in here. So I'm like, all right, well, we're going to have to wait to the end of the ceremony. So at the end of the ceremony, I go and find a member of staff with her. And I say, look, I've got an empty folder. You know, it looks like a degree certificate, but there's nothing in there. They say, okay, we'll go up to the office at the top of the building and they'll sort it out. So I go up and they basically say to me, oh, yeah, because various marks were delayed this year, some certificates didn't get printed off in time. That genuinely is just, unfortunately, there was a few of us that had that situation. And they said, you know, you'll be posted your certificate. So I'm like, that's absolutely fine. And I kind of in passing made a comment and said, oh, it was ironic that you were all worried about me when it was on your side that my name didn't get called. And I kind of said it as a joke, because again, I still thought it was a mistake.
Mm.
And they said, oh yes, it was probably because we'd put a mark next to your name to let them know that you'd be slow, and they must have thought it meant you weren't there.
Right. So without any consultation whatsoever,
yeah.
They decided that you would take a lot longer. They didn't discuss it with you.
They didn't discuss it with me. They put this mark next to my name. They didn't tell the head of school reading out the names what that mark meant.
Because it was an X, wasn't it? He or she probably interpreted as meaning you weren't there.
Yeah. I don't know necessarily that it was an X, but it was something like that, you know, and you would think that if there was a mark next to a student's name, it means not in attendance. Like, what else would you think, you know?
Yeah.
And I just didn't really say anything. I sort of left because I think it hadn't hit me at that point, actually, that was really, really wrong. I was like, this doesn't feel right. But I'm also massively stressed, and I've got to find my sister and meet up with her. We've got lunch booked. You know, I'm sort of just thinking about all this other stuff that you do on the day. And I met up with my sister and my nephew and my friend, and I basically said to my sister, I was like, you know, did you notice they didn't call my name? And she was like, yeah, because we were reading the program and everyone was kind of looking at each other when your name didn't get called because it was on the program.
So you were on the actual program that was given to guests.
Yeah. I was on the program next to the other girl who graduated on my course, and my sister went, we didn't think your name was called because you were blind, and we thought they were making a big deal out of it. And it's interesting to me that was immediately where her mind went. And I think sometimes we get so used to discrimination that actually we kind of go, oh, well, it's fine. And actually, once everyone else started to be like, no, that is really bad, I was like, yeah, actually, that's not okay.
And the irony of this is, of course, that part of your course involved disability studies, didn't it?
Well, I was doing social and public policy, yeah. So I'm looking at, it's effectively kind of a sociology degree with a focus on public policy. So I've written quite a few essays. I wrote a big essay on the Equality Act, actually, for one of my courses.
How have things been left with the university now?
Well, my disability advisor emailed me to be like, did everything go okay? I want to check that you're all right, because she obviously had no idea what happened, but wanted to check in, given our arguments back and forth. And I basically said to her, well, this is what happened, and I'm not that happy. And she was like to me, look, if you want me to, I can raise a complaint, and you can also submit a formal complaint. So I did get her to reach out to the graduation team on my behalf, because she was like, look, go and, you know, enjoy the rest of your day. Like, literally, I went and had lunch, and then I spent the afternoon sending back and forth emails trying to deal with this. So then I had a meeting with head of programs and events at the university, who kind of runs the graduation side of things, and I laid out everything that happened. Also, the head of the disability office was there, and I was very, very direct with them, and I think they were very much expecting me to come into this meeting being upset and then being able to be like, oh, we're very sorry, and for me to be like, yeah, okay then. But I wasn't. I was like, this is what's happened. I will be making a formal complaint. And after putting it on Twitter, I heard from multiple other disabled students who similar things have happened to this year and historically. So I was like, there's clearly a problem in your department. You can't pass this off as a once-off mistake.
And one of the things we hear from universities is how committed they are to inclusion, equality, disability awareness, etc., etc. So this must have come as a little bit of a surprise to you, I would have
thought. I've been dealing with the universities for long enough that I wouldn't say a surprise. I was more irritated because I had communicated with them. My disability advisor had communicated with them. You know, this team has been offered training, and if they are choosing not to pick up that training because they're arrogant enough to think they don't need it, that's frustrating to me. It's actually ironic. The university had launched their equality, diversity and inclusion strategy around that same day.
So here's a question for you. I mean, now that you've had a chance to reflect on it, why do things like this continue to happen?
I think there's a cultural issue at the bottom of it, which is that universities, and not just universities, but wider systems, wider organisations, do not respect disabled people. They do not treat disabled people as whole adults who are capable of making decisions and who know their own needs.
See, I have what I call the validity theory, where we are regarded as kind of 50% valid as people.
Yeah, exactly. And so if I say I need this, they will think, oh, well, you know, no, you should just get help to walk across that stage because you'll be less of a problem, because I'm viewed as a liability. So I'm viewed as a blind person who won't know where I am on stage, who'll crash into everything, cause all this trouble. And so they make assumptions about me. And then based off those assumptions, they take actions which are exactly the opposite of what I've asked them to do. And then they cause a situation. And often in these kinds of situations, then the disabled person does do something, you know, that maybe they hurt themselves, and then the person goes, oh, well, we told you all along that you'd make a mistake.
It vindicates everything they said. Yeah. One in a thousand has an accident, and suddenly there you are, you know, the insurers are involved, etc.
Well, it's like if I step off a train and someone grabs hold of me because they think I'm going to fall, and then I fall because they've pulled me off balance.
Yes.
They go, oh, well, you know, of course, that, you know, I was trying to help and you've fallen, so you've proven my point. And it's like they don't listen to the fact that actually they've caused this situation. I think that's a big problem.
So you've made the formal complaint. Where are things now with the university? Presumably they're mulling it over, are they?
Well, so I've had a meeting. I am yet to submit my formal complaint document because I need it to be very, very robust and well documented. So I've sent it off to a couple of people who deal with these sorts of things and have a lot of experience, just to check over what I'm asking for and what I'm insisting. And then it will get sent off to the university. But I have had this meeting. So there's two strands to this. There's the formal complaint, but then there's also the informal side of it where they've already agreed to investigate. And I haven't heard anything about that bit.
I guess it's the summer, so people may be on holiday or whatever. But nonetheless, you'd have thought by now that you might have heard
something. Yeah, I mean, I will be following up with them probably next week, just dropping them an email to say, you know, has any progress been made regarding our meeting? Because it's been a few weeks now, so.
How do you feel now? You know, you've had a few weeks to kind of digest and process all of this. How do you feel about your graduation day itself?
I mean, it's definitely not one I'm going to look back on as, wasn't this a great graduation? I'm glad I graduated, obviously. I think I'm very much now in PhD preparation mode. I've moved on. But I am pursuing this side of it because I think, actually, while I'm kind of seasoned at this, and it really annoys me. It annoys me because I gave them the opportunity to do the right thing so many times and they just refuse to listen.
So why are you pursuing it then? If you've moved on, why are you pursuing it?
Because I think for other students, this is actually really damaging for them. You know, there's people who are new to disability, people who maybe would find this deeply, deeply distressing, not just enraging. And I think actually something has to change and they have to take ownership. You know, and I received a message on Twitter from kind of the university social media team, which is always sorry for the distress, you know, that you feel. And that really annoys me because it's like, don't be sorry that I feel distressed. Be sorry that you caused a situation. Like, and I think I just want them to take responsibility and to see that actually this won't happen again.
So you're moving on to do a PhD, I think I'm right in saying, in human rights law?
Yes. So, yeah, in law, but with a human rights focus.
So what's the plan after that? I mean, that's a three-year course, is it, I presume?
I would love some kind of research-based job, whether I go and do a postdoc first or look at a job, you know, in academia or depending on the state of academia in 3 years, maybe a non-governmental organisation. I don't know yet.
But you could go into academia, and my friends who work in academia aren't as positive as they might have been 10 years ago about the whole atmosphere.
Yeah, I mean, there's layers and layers of issues. So there's the issues of, you know, vice-chancellors bringing in $300,000 a year for themselves and not increasing wages for academics. But there's also the issue at the moment of the government attacks on degrees.
When you did your undergraduate degree, you did a course that probably would be highly valued because you did Spanish. And what interested me in particular is you went to Colombia for your year abroad. Yeah. I've been to Colombia as well. I've got to ask you about this because Colombia isn't the safest country in Central South America. How on earth did you get on?
It's like any country. There are areas that are not safe and there are areas that are much safer. And I think particularly as kind of a tourist or someone who's not from there, you shouldn't be naive about this. You know, you shouldn't think everyone on the street is lovely. Equally, don't just go, oh, well, you know, these people are Colombians, therefore they're bad. You know, it's that kind of having that nuance and being like, you could get mugged on the tube in London, you know. So I think for me, I mean, I was studying at a university. I didn't live on campus. I lived in the city.
You were in Medellin, weren't
you? Yeah. I made a lot of friends. I really made an effort to be very social, which was not something I actually had found that easy as an undergrad. You know, I had small groups of friends, but I was always the kind of person who gravitated towards smaller social gatherings, whereas actually when I went to Colombia, I joined a couple of the student WhatsApp groups, which were like Colombian students and international students, and organized a lot of events. And I think my first weekend I went to a big party, and it was definitely something I wouldn't have normally done, but I was like, if I don't do this, I'm not going to meet anyone. And I realized that I would need people in a way I didn't need people in England, you know, going food shopping over there. I often would go with friends because actually I couldn't walk into a shop and get assistance, or there were some online delivery services which I did make use of, but for the most part, you know, it was going into places. And so I built a really strong network of friends who also acted as a support network. And, you know, I feel like I made sure it was mutual. I would often cook for my friend who really didn't want to cook. He did want to eat the food. He didn't want to cook, but but he was quite happy to go shopping with me.
I'd be interested to know what you think of their attitude in Colombia towards disability, what the differences are between Central South America and Europe.
I mean, I think there's a layer of this which isn't even just disability, but is poverty and the extent of poverty you see over there. There's just this gulf, right? So over here, you may see homeless people, and there are people who live in poverty in this country, and we can't understate that. I didn't really meet a lot of blind people over there. I do know a few blind Colombians, and I did actually hang out with someone who I knew online who was a blind Colombian, and he actually came to a party that I threw with just all my university friends, and I was like, if you're in the city, just come and hang out with us, you know, so that was fun. You know, we would see blind people on the streets begging as well. And I think the attitude was mixed. You know, actually all my lecturers at the university were great and were really willing to adapt things. And I actually took an art class when I was out there, and it was like, it wasn't an actual art class as in like painting or anything. It was more kind of like art history and art critique. And the professor who ran that class was amazing, you know, really worked to make it accessible to me and, you know, to describe things and to kind of engage me with resources that I could use. So I, on the one hand, I found the professors engaging. On the other hand, there were a lot of materials I couldn't access, and I was able to access them because I obviously had funding through Disabled Students Allowance. So I had UK funding even though I was abroad, and that paid for a reader, which is again something I don't use over here because I expect accessible materials, but over there I didn't necessarily have any right to them.
One of the things you mentioned during the graduation was misgendering, which obviously would have been very, very annoying, because that's been a big change in your life. Talk me through
it,
if you don't
mind. My voice sounds different, for sure.
Yeah, I think it does. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Talk me through that briefly, if you would, then. Or as briefly as you can.
I came out as transgender last August. It's been a year now. I started socially transitioning, which is where you do things like ask people to call you a different name, where you maybe change certain non-medical aspects of your appearance, you know, things like clothing, update your name at the bank and all those really boring things that you need to do. I also began a medical transition 6 months ago, which for this part of it, it takes the form of hormone replacement. So I use testosterone gel every day. People think I must be like, you know, taking this really crazy kind of medicine. It's literally just like a pump of gel, almost like, you know, a moisturizer pump. You pump it onto your hand, you rub it on your upper arm, and you let it dry. And that's literally...
And that's all you do?
Yeah, that's it. And, wow. It's people think it's way more exciting. It just is a standard part of my routine in the morning now. So that is, I mean, there's obviously further medical procedures which are more surgical, but in order to do things like change the pitch of my voice, to change certain aspects of my appearance, that gel does all of that, which is great.
And how have people reacted to you? Not just the fact that you now define yourself as a man, but also how does that interact, if you like, with visual impairment?
I mean, I do think it's hard for blind people to get someone's gender right. And I think this is hard for sighted people too. But I do think sighted people have more clues. You know, if someone is wearing very stereotypically feminine clothes, and obviously this is a stereotype, but if someone's wearing those, you're probably going to default to calling them a woman, even if their voice sounds very deep, because you're going to go, okay, this person's dressed like a woman, that's probably how they identify. As a blind person, you know, you may meet someone and kind of make a guess based off their voice.
So when we look at disability more generally then, you know, and you think about your experiences, how it's related to your current situation, your transgender situation, how it relates to the graduation, your time in Colombia. How do you view disability now in this country? Where are we? Where do we need to get to?
I think there is a very worrying situation happening in this country at the moment, where I would say we've had 12 years now of austerity. That has not been good for disabled people. But I think in terms of disability rights, I'm even seeing some really worrying discourse, you know, things around, well, let's repeal the Human Rights Act, these kind of conversations on, you know, Rishi Sunak calling the Equality Act woke nonsense. Like, these are the laws that give us rights and that enshrine our rights in law. And that, to me, is an actual serious concern. And I think more of us should be worried and, you know, trying to do something about this, because...
Here's the unfair question. On a scale of 1 to 10, 10 being extremely concerned and 1 being totally unconcerned, where would you put yourself on that scale?
I don't know. Honestly, I think... The thing is, I think I'm very high up that scale, but I also am realistic that they could do something even worse, which might push the scale up a bit more, so... I would say I'm towards the higher end for sure.
Brilliant. Connor, thank you very much indeed.
Yeah, thank you.
I bet you're exhausted now.
It's all right.
And thanks very much to Connor Scott-Gardner for sharing that story with us. And just a quick update. Although Connor has had a meeting with Leeds University, he hasn't heard anything since, so watch this space. OK, the part of the podcast you've all been waiting for. Yes, the music. And what have I gone for? Well, it's a belter of a track by The Vow called Back to Monday.
I sang my songs like all the other fakes. Ashamed to make the same old tired mistakes. If I let you down, it won't be the last time. I'm a fawning clown for your love. There's a whole wild world lying in between us. I don't think we've ever been so far apart. All you saints and seers and all. To Monday, back to Monday, back to Monday. I blew my mind in many shades of gray. In love with yesterday. Where my headstone reads, didn't make much difference. All my thoughts and deeds and all my love. And no one sang a song to change my world. And no one saw the colors that I. Learn to show some feeling, fenestrate my soul for my love. There's a whole wild world lying in between us. I don't think we've ever been so far apart. All you saints and seers and all. Monday, back to Monday. tomorrow.